This is an iHeart podcast.
Congressman Jim Jordan joins us talking about this new discovery. We're going to talk about culture war stuff. Steve Baker is here. Connor Tomlinson, Mary Morgan. We're packed tonight. And I'm right. This is not about Donald Trump. Wake up and grow up. This is not about Donald Trump. You had better wake up and realize this is about you. They are coming for you. And when they do, you can't stop them. Who's they? What's going on? What was I talking about then? Well, we'll get to Congressman Jim Jordan here in a couple minutes about the latest and worst coming out of the government. But just remember what we've been talking about. We talked about it again last night. Our own government, your government, my government, it is turned against us. It views us, you, me, as the biggest enemy of this country. And they intend to treat us as we have treated enemies of the state in the past. You look at the things America has done to radical jihad, Nazi Germany, whatever it may be. These people speak about you the same way they spoke about them. All this MAGA this and MAGA that.
Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic.
The MAGA Republicans don't just threaten our personal rights and economic security. They're a threat to our very democracy.
Extreme MAGA Republicans don't want the children of America to learn about the Holocaust.
While MAGA Republicans are fixated on their extremist agenda.
And sadly, so many of those extremists, those MAGA extremists, take their marching orders from Donald Trump. And when do they break with him? You know, because at some point, you know, maybe there needs to be a formal deprogramming of the cult members.
You understand how unprecedented and dangerous this is? At no other point in America's history have politicians over and over and over again demonized the voters of the other guy. They always demonize the other guy. Ah, is he Antichrist? That's not new at all. Now it has become the norm. And now it's filtered down into our intelligence agencies. And the federal government is flagging you if you buy a Bible? What does that mean? Joining me now, Congressman Jim Jordan, House Judiciary Chairman. Congressman, okay, you broke the news yesterday. Terms like MAGA are being flagged by the government, buying a Bible, going to Bass Pro Shop. I think a lot of people, I think a lot of people's eyes about popped out of their skull yesterday when you were reporting on all this. First, can you tell us, what does that mean, flagged? What does that mean?
Well, you got, it's financial surveillance. You got banks searching their customers' transactions, looking for key searching for key terms. By the way, all at the suggestion, the request of the federal government. Now, some of this relates to, based on the initial documents we got, looks like it relates to January 6th. This we had one doctor talk about a 60-day rolling look back, and then they're looking at if any of these online purchases were done with where there's some kind of description. They use the word MAGA, Trump. But also, if they were just buying things like firearms, if they're buying them at Dick's Sporting Goods, Cabela's, Bass Pro Shop, there was even a reference in there to purchasing religious texts, all under the guise of, if you're doing this, they were developing a profile on people saying that they were potentially domestic violent extremists. So you step back and you think about it. You buy a gun, you buy a Bible. That's First and Second Amendment protected activity, not to mention the Fourth Amendment the big government is urging banks to give them that information because they wanna what? Surveil you, spy on you, develop a profile on you. It's really troubling, but we're just at the front end of this. It's just the initial documents we got. So we're gonna be issuing subpoenas, getting in more information from the banks and from people in the government, particularly the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network in the Treasury called the FinCEN in the Treasury Department of the government as well.
Congressman, I'm glad you're all over this, and I'm glad you keep digging this stuff up. Something that concerns me greatly is how brazen these people are with this stuff. You talk a lot about the FBI memo, about infiltrating Catholic churches. It looks like there's nothing these people won't do.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, Jesse, because the initial documents we've got on this issue, they read exactly like that memorandum in the Richmond field office of the FBI, where they were saying, if you're a pro-life Catholic, traditional Catholic, you're an extremist, you're a potential domestic violent extremist. They read exactly like that document. And remember what the FBI told us. They said, oh, that was a one-off. That just happened in Richmond. What we found actually was it was broader than just the Richmond field office. And now we see where it looks like it's the Treasury Department, the Homeland Security Department, and potentially the Justice Department all involved in this surveillance effort with big banks. So and in between all that, we spent the last year, particularly the Select Committee on the Weaponization of Government, we spent the last year looking at the censorship issue, where it was big government, big media, big tech, big academia, all working together to censor American speech. And now we find out it's big government working with big corporations to financially surveil Americans, you know, purchase and business transactions.
How do we defund these people? How do we stop them? I know there's a big government funding argument right now, and we don't have to go into the details of that, but are we really going to just keep handing them money to keep abusing the American people?
But you do a couple things. One, you draw attention to it. Just that sometimes can change behavior. I always point to the fact that the IRS announced like 5 months ago that they will no longer be making unannounced visits to American citizens' homes. And the commissioner of the IRS said, we're doing this to protect our agents, you know, for their safety, the safety of our agents. And like baloney, they're doing it because we caught them knocking on Matt Taibbi's door when he's testifying in front of our committee. The Department of Homeland Security, we made a big deal when we discovered that there was a disinformation governance board at the Department of Homeland Security, and they've discontinued that. So part of it's just like this sort of whack-a-mole. You draw attention to it and you can stop it. But in the end, we're going to have to say, hey, you can't get the money. You can't use taxpayer money to then take that money and turn around and go after the very taxpayers who are funding you. So we are going to have to use the power of the purse to deal with them as well, and then propose legislation. That's we're legislators. That's our business. So we need to do that as well. Some consequences for these people who violate fundamental liberties of the American people.
Where do we stand on Joe Biden's crimes? Obviously, there's all kinds of evidence out there. We have Hunter Biden's subpoena, not showing up, doing a press conference. Where does all this stuff stand? I know it's a razor-thin majority. I'm not hopeful at all he actually gets impeached, but you never know.
Well, we're proceeding with our impeachment inquiry with Kevin Morris, the guy who, you know, spent like almost $5 million of his money in helping Hunter Biden, who bought a bunch of Hunter Biden's artwork. So we're deposing him. Next week, we have Rob Walker, one of Hunter Biden's business partners, and Eric Schwerin is coming in the week after that, another one of his business partners. And then we have Jim Biden and Hunter Biden, who we expect to come in next month as well. We've been in negotiations with Abby Lowell after the committees, both the Judiciary Committee and the Oversight Committee held Hunter Biden in contempt for him not showing up for the deposition back in December. We held him in contempt last week. Since that vote in the committees, Hunter Biden's counsel has reached out to our chief counsel on the oversight or on the Judiciary Committee, and we continue to negotiate. We think he's coming in, I think we're going to know more by this afternoon when in fact that day may be. But we're just going to continue to do our work, and then we'll make a decision on whether we move forward with actual articles of impeachment.
Speaking of impeachment, Alejandro Mayorkas, not that I think impeaching him is going to secure the border, but is there anything we can do to force Democrats to secure the border? They very clearly don't want to. They want the border open. It's not an accident. It's not a whoopsie. They do this on purpose. So can we force them to actually protect our country?
We're trying, but you're exactly right. This is deliberate, willful, intentional. They did it from the get-go. So we'll keep making the case. I actually think in some ways it could be a simple sentence. No money can be used to process or release into the country any new migrant. Basically, you just say stop. Suspend entry into the country right now. It's so bad. We're on pace. The magnitude of this problem is we're on pace in the Biden administration, in his term, to reach 12 million migrants coming in the country. I told someone the other day that's the equivalent of the entire population of my home state, the state of Ohio. We're the seventh largest state in the country. 12 million people coming in a four-year time frame. That's never happened. So That's the pace we're on. I don't think they want to change it because they intentionally did it in the first place. Why administration would do that to the American people, I don't know. But that's where they are. So we can't give in on this Ukraine deal with border, pretend border that's been talked about. I just don't see that happening one way. We should not be for that. We should be for something that actually secures the border. Short of that, I think we're going to have to wait until President Trump's in the White House and he can secure the border like he did just 3 years ago.
Congressman, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Jesse. Take care.
All right. More on a very weaponized government with Steve Baker. He's got some good stuff for us. Before we get to Steve, let's get to this. Let's have an honest talk about money. They're not going to stop spending. Oh, yeah, but if Republicans take them to stop. Republicans spend as much money as Democrats do. No one appears that they're going to fight for the value of your dollar, so we have to take steps to protect ourselves. There's no one coming to save your dollar. Get some precious metals. Gold or silver, I don't care what color it is. Get it in your retirement. Get it in your physical possession. Oxford Gold Group, they're the ones who handle all this for you, and it's easy. They make it easy. Give them a call. Tell them I told you to call. I send my family there. I send my friends there. They're the only people I deal with. 833-995-GOLD. Don't get caught with your pants down when they get done destroying the dollar. 833-995-GOLD, Oxford Gold Group. We'll be back.
The Justice Department will hold all January 6 perpetrators at any level accountable under the law. Whether they were present that day or were otherwise criminally responsible for the assault on our democracy.
Interesting choice of words, whether they were present or not. Which leads me to the man, Steve Baker, wonderful investigative journalist at The Blaze. Hey, Steve, did you hear from the DOJ? What's going on with you? What'd you do?
Hey, well, you know, I was one of those people that walked into one of those, what are they called, restricted areas that day. Of course, I had a camera, a tripod, a man on the street microphone, and was doing my job, as were about 60 other journalists that walked through those doors and broken windows that day and did their job. But they seemed to be only targeting a certain type of voice.
Certain type of voice. Okay, so tell us, give us the details for those who don't know. What is going on with you? What happened?
Yeah, right now, the only thing that we are aware of is that after 2.5 years of the FBI investigating me, which included a sit-down interview with them back in October of 2021, that they have since told me that they were going to prosecute me. This was in late 21, and then they disappeared for 20 months. We didn't hear from them at all. And then in August of last year, my attorney received an actual grand jury subpoena for my work that day, from all of my videos. We did cooperate. We complied. We handed over all of my video. And then 4 months later, they popped up here just the week before Christmas and said that they were going to have me self-surrender in my hometown of Raleigh, North Carolina, on the next week, which would have been the Tuesday before Christmas, and that at that point, then I would know what my charges were and what I was facing from the Department of Justice. But because of the media response to that initial threat, they seemed to have backed off. My attorneys did not hear from them again until the week between Christmas and New Year's, and at what time they informed, the U.S. attorney informed my attorney that they would have me self-surrender in mid-January. Well, now we are, 17th, 18th of the month now. It's well past mid-January, and they have gone silent yet again. So we don't know what's happening. We're in limbo at this time.
I'm sure they're loving your reporting on it, such as a Capitol police officer in plain clothes finding the pipe bomb. What are you talking about, Steve?
Well, for 3 years, the FBI has stonewalled the media and the country and Congress in revealing who this person was that actually discovered the pipe bomb at the DNC headquarters on January 6th. They have only characterized that individual as a passerby. And every news story from that day until literally on the third anniversary, CBS did a news story in which they said it was discovered by a passerby. That's all the FBI and DOJ and ATF, United States Capitol Police, Metro Police has ever told the public. But we were able to source this out and discover that, in fact, it was a United States Capitol Police plainclothes or undercover officer who made that surprising discovery and then wandered over to the Secret Service vehicle that was parked only 15 feet from the bomb and informed them that he had discovered what looked like a pipe bomb. And then, of course, the Secret Service agent and the Metropolitan Police officer that was sitting in that car having their lunch, finished their sandwiches first, of course, before they got out and checked on the story that a Capitol Police officer gave them. And of course, we should not leave out the fact that Vice President-elect Kamala Harris was sitting inside that building at that moment.
Yeah, well, there's no need to rush. Yeah. You certainly don't want to waste a good sandwich. And what a magnificent coincidence that a cop just happened to be there and find it, and then he gave it to the Secret Service, and they didn't care. Anyway, Steve, let's move on, because I want to talk about some other things. Nancy Pelosi's head of security. Testimony at Oath Keepers trials. Give us the skinny on this. What happened?
It's very simple. In the October of 22 trial, the first Oath Keepers trial, I was there. I was covering that trial every day, sitting in the press room, the media room. And on one of the first days of the trial, on October 3rd, the lead prosecuting attorney, assistant U.S. attorney Jeffrey Nessler, approached the court, the bench, and threw a hissy fit because there was a quote-unquote rogue attorney that was going to release two FBI interviews, what they call 302 documents, and he was going to make those public. And these documents were under court seal. And of course, that was my radar started pinging at the moment. I wanted to know what was in those documents. But what the judge did, Judge Ahmet Mehta did, is he actually addressed the media in the press pool and directed the media to tweet out and warn that attorney that if he did make those documents public, that they that he would hold that attorney in contempt and throw him in jail. Well, all of the press pool kind of giggled. Myself, I had the exact opposite response. I went, well, what's in those documents? And then that became my obsession for the next year. As I began to piece that story together, I found the documents. I found where they led. I found that these were interviews with Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn, in which he contradicted himself in the two FBI interviews. And then, of course, Harry Dunn's testimony before Congress and his interviews against the Oath Keepers. And then, of course, his testimony in court in that trial did not comport with the facts and did not comport with his FBI interviews. And it does not comport with the videos that we've harvested in the Capitol CCTV viewing room. And so David Lazarus, the special agent in charge of Pelosi's security detail, was brought in to make his story work a little better. Unfortunately, their stories also conflicted with each other in trial transcript, and we were able to bring to the nation's attention here that nothing that Lazarus, Special Agent Lazarus, said in that trial testimony was, in fact, the truth. Nothing was the truth. He could not have seen what he claimed to have seen in the trial. He could not have been a witness to the Oath Keeper Harry Dunn encounter, because when that encounter started, he was actually in another building, not in the Capitol complex itself.
Golly. Clearly the Capitol Police are a bit concerned about your reporting, aren't they, Steve? They sent out a memo?
There has been several memos mentioning me and my stories. One in particular that you're showing here was an internal memo between Capitol Police leadership where they said that they were watching the Lazarus story, which we actually first did in print 3 months ago before we had permission to release the videos. And then this Monday, we were able to accompany the actual story with the video evidence itself. But they said that they were watching it, and they said that they were tracking it to see if it gained traction itself, and that they were, you know, kind of pleased that it wasn't. And then, of course, when the videos came out on Monday, that all changed because it has been seen by millions now.
Steve, you've obviously done a lot more digging into this than 99.99% of America's population. What do you think about January 6th? Clearly, the federal government was involved, but there are many degrees of involved. They were kind of there, they were encouraging it, didn't care if it happened, all the way to they planned the whole thing so they could justify attacking the right. What do you think after all the things you've seen?
Yeah, I'm not fully on board with the Fedsurrection narrative or that the feds planned this whole thing. I am on board with the idea that it was allowed to happen as it was developing. I believe from my investigations that all the various groups, the various departments, first of all, starting with the failures in intel, which were not really failures. There was very specific intelligence that this was going to be a melee that day that was ignored, that was not passed to the right people to provide the right protection, to have the right staffing necessary that day. But I do believe that this was an event that was allowed to take shape as they watched it from the command center in the Capitol Police headquarters. We are learning more and more and more that leadership at the Capitol Police were very integrally involved with the development of what happened that day.
Steve, stay on it. We're praying for you, buddy. Rooting for you. All right. As if all that wasn't a lot to take in, the World Economic Forum is meeting. As you know, we've been talking about this. Connor Tomlinson is going to give us the latest and greatest, worst, I don't know how I should put that, from the World Economic Forum. Now let's talk about something amazing. Let's talk about being able to break free. Free from your timeshare. That timeshare you want out of. The timeshare that's doubled its annual fees on you. The timeshare you can't even get in anymore. Hey, I'd love to come this weekend. Sorry, we're booked for 3 years. Why don't you just get out? Oh, Jesse, I can't. I signed the contract. I tried to get out. They told me I'm in forever. They tell everyone that that's a lie. Lone Star Transfer can and will get you out. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. I'm only 99% sure. That's how successful they are. 99% of the time, Lone Star Transfer will legally and permanently get you out. You like your odds there? This is a family business. They've been helping people for a long time. Dump those costs at a time where we all need to dump costs. Call them. 844-310-2646. Or go online at LoneStarTransfer.com. They will get you out. All right? We'll be back.
Social justice is not just, and it doesn't contribute either to the general well-being. Quite on the contrary, it's an intrinsically unfair idea because it's violent. It's unjust because the state is financed through tax, and taxes are collected coercively. Or can any one of us say that they voluntarily pay taxes, which means that the state is financed through coercion, and that the higher the tax burden, the higher the coercion, and the lower the freedom. Do not surrender to the advance of the state. The state is not the solution. The state is the problem itself.
Gosh, what I wouldn't give to have one American politician speak the way this dude from Argentina speaks at the World Economic Forum, right in their friggin' face. It's awesome. Joining me now, Connor Tomlinson, writer and presenter at LotusEaters.com. Connor, you have to respect the gall to storm into the WEF and just rub freedom right in their face.
Yeah, it feels very strange for me as a Brit, Jesse, to be praising an Argentinian, but I was a bit skeptical about Javier Milei when he was first elected president, particularly because of his plan to hitch the Argentinian economy, suffering from hyperinflation as it is, to the US dollar. I mean, we know that the Biden State Department, for example, has threatened South American politician Nayib Bukele for taking very non-liberal moves in El Salvador to crack down on MS-13 and make his country a very safe and prosperous place as a result. The Biden administration didn't really like that, and they threatened to withdraw foreign aid. So I was thinking Bukele's taking a few gambles here. But the fact that he got up at the WEF and looked right in the eyes of all the faces of the most fanatical supporters of the socialist donut economic plan, where they're going to create a fully sustainable, I'm sure, economy that's a fixed pie that they, the managers from Davos, can divide up and allocate to each of us what they think we should have, and said to them, no, socialism is wrong. It's killed 100 million people. It is economically backwards. Its mechanics don't work. And the people that espouse it just want to accrue power for themselves to their own corrupt ends. Bravo to him.
Connor, what are they discussing at the WEF? Because as much as it saddens me, these are important people, and I hate to use that word, but they are. These are the leaders of societies. They're politicians, they're CEOs. These are people who have a lot of control. I think normal people should know what exactly they're discussing.
Yeah, well, since we're all paying for this extravagant cocktail party, where apparently, according to the reporting every year, the prostitutes are always overbooked, so I'm so glad the character of our elites is never in dispute. It's always good to know what they're actually talking about. And they put out this risk report every single year, and they boil it down to this infographic. And this year, they decided to rank their concerns as to what is going to be of biggest concern in the next 2 years and the next 10 years. And some of this is true, some of it is gaslighting. So the biggest concern they have in the next 2 years is misinformation and disinformation. Now, what they're saying that means is AI, deepfakes, algorithmically generated content. But we know that's gaslighting because these are the types of people who are almost definitely going to use computer-generated content on us to push their plans. We all remember the 2030, you will own nothing and you will be happy plan, right? Well, they came out with that. Then when we looked at it and said, hang on, that sounds a lot like communism. They said, that's a conspiracy theory. We never said it. Pay no attention to the fact that it was on our website. So what they really mean is shows like ours pushing true information that is inconvenient to their narrative, and how they need a global framework for regulating that misinformation, AKA kicking us off the internet. And so they don't care about algorithmically generated content or misinformation. It's just if it's inconvenient to what they want to roll out. And then down that list is extreme weather events, AKA climate catastrophizing. And that moves up into their 10-year slot to the top spot, saying that that's what's going to be the biggest threat. Now, we know they're bluffing about that because, number one, if they believed that, they wouldn't keep buying up beachfront property after all those Hawaii wildfires, which I'm sure that we'll get an answer to why there were so many failings going on there eventually. But within the last 100 years, we've had, despite a massive expansion in infrastructure, a reduction by 30% of damage to property caused by extreme weather events, and a reduction in the lives lost by 99%. So we're only getting safer with technological innovation, stronger infrastructure and the like, and that's while fossil fuels have been going up and more places are getting cleaner, cheaper energy. That's what they want to sabotage. And then the really insidious one is in the next 2 years, they say irregular or involuntary, that was the phrase they used, involuntary migration is going to be a big risk. Right. Who destabilized all these countries' economies? Who made it so that NGOs are bussing people up from South America, or even flying them from China and India over to the South American border, or to France to ship them across in dinghies to the UK? Who brought this deluge of third world economic chances to the West? Right, that's you guys, the constituents, as Klaus Schwab says, currently in Davos. And so the really disturbing thing is terrorism is not linked in their top 10, it's linked in their top 30 priorities in the 2 years. But it somehow, even after all of this involuntary migration, which we have seen in the UK, for example, from Iran, Sudan, Afghanistan, we've seen multiple asylum seekers, chancers, commit terrorist acts in the UK. In the next 10 years, somehow that falls to the bottom of their priority list, despite migration going up. So we know that they are lying to us and that things are just going to get worse.
Okay, that's all pretty much horrifying. Tell me about Disease X. I couldn't help but notice that timeline or that headline yesterday. They're also discussing Disease X, and they don't seem that bummed about it.
No, well, I just come to bring you the good news, don't I, Jesse? So Disease X was cooked up as a name in a book that was co-authored by former Prime Minister of the UK, Tony Blair, who was very obsessed during lockdown as part of the Tony Blair Institute to implement digital IDs and vaccine passports. And this comes hot on the heels, of course, of the WHO's brand new pandemic preparedness treaty, where they've repealed their global health advisory guidelines and instituted a all of society, all of government approach to managing future pandemics, because they think there's going to be one coming down the pipe. And they're going to use this to, one, make all of the treaty plans rather than non-binding advice, binding for all member states. And this includes ability for the WHO to say in every member country, vaccines must be mandated, vaccine passports must be mandated, lockdowns and arbitrary travel restrictions must be implemented, and anyone who's suspected of being ill can be shut down for a quarantine camp. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Tedros, you know, the Chinese Communist Party's favorite puppet, is the only person that can declare a health emergency, and he recently said that climate change is a health emergency. So look forward to climate lockdowns. But the point of disease X is that they're saying, hypothetically, there's going to be this new zoonotic disease, not released from the Chinese lab where we know it's all coming from, but instead it's going to be unleashed from like the permafrost or something, like it's the alien from The Thing. And so we need to get out ahead of this. And what's happening in the UK in Salisbury, which is in the southwest of the country, in a former bioweapons lab that was supposedly decommissioned in the 1940s and 50s, so I'm really glad that we know that there's nothing shady going on there, is they're developing a vaccine for disease X already. But we don't know what disease X is. So what on earth are they developing it for, other than synthesizing new forms of COVID because they suspect it's going to be some sort of new strain of COVID? And it's definitely not gain-of-function research, because, of course, that would be illegal. It's all very suspicious, and I think this is just one grand pretext to scaremonger, to set up the manufactured consent so they can control us and lock us down again, and to ensure Albert Bourla over at Pfizer gets another fat paycheck.
Connor, what's the Ken effect?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked this. And this kind of ties into the WEF, actually, because when you look at media, when you look at things that have been created with a woke narrative, a lot of, and this is why I've referenced Barbie, a lot of the programming that comes out, things like Disney and Warner Brothers these days, that is trying to push a woke message, it falls flat on its face because they don't realize that not everyone has the brain parasite of wokeness. So what ends up happening is people watch films where they're trying to layer wokeness as a hyper-reality over things we know to be true. And the villains in these films are people pushing back against that, like Ken in Barbie, who wants the patriarchy. And so-called patriarchy just means the Barbies end up getting in relationships with the Kens and being happier, and men decide to run things and be useful. And normal people look at that film and go, yo, I identify with the villain, actually. You know, like Gaston in Beauty and the Beast. He's actually sensible for wanting to kill the town werewolf and settle down with a nice girl. And so what's happening now, this is the sort of get woke, go broke phenomena with Disney. People are not just not watching their films, but they're watching their stuff and they're going, well, all the woke stuff is not at all entertaining, but now Ken is the biggest meme of the Barbie movie. He just won an Emmy for I'm Just Ken. And so this is something the right, conservatives, traditionalists, reactionaries can do. It's not let them get away with their propaganda when it's so poorly written that it accidentally aligns with our worldview. And so it's just a fun meme, but it's a phenomenon that they can't keep help running into because the people that are making culture are completely out of touch with reality.
That's really good. I like it. Connor, come back soon. I appreciate you, brother. All right, speaking of culture war stuff, Mary Morgan, she's going to join us next. We're going to have a little chat about RuPaul and drag races and all kinds of other things. Hang on.
Listen, if a drag queen wants to read you a story at a library, listen to her, because knowledge is power. And if someone tries to restrict your access to power, they are trying to scare you. So listen to a drag queen. We love you. Thank you. Thank you.
Her? You need to listen to her? I'm so confused. See, I'm old enough to remember when men were men, and they actually preferred women, and women preferred men, and they got together, and now we're in this world between the trannies and the drag queens. I don't know. You know what? Let's ask Mary about this. Joining me now, Mary Morgan, co-host of Pop Culture Crisis. She's also a writer at Timcast. Mary, maybe you could bone me up on all this because I'm quite a bit older than you. Are drag queens her now? Is that what it is?
Yes, that is how they refer to each other. And thank you for having me, Jesse. I'm a little bit ashamed to admit this, but I did, in fact, watch the first 5 or 6 seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race. So I am very familiar with who this man is. He is a man. He does go by he, him pronouns. The ironic part of RuPaul's Drag Race, though, is the main audience isn't gay men and isn't drag queens. They know where their pockets are lined. They know where their bread is buttered. It is actually straight white women the awfuls of society who are watching this show. And I stopped watching long ago, but what I know about RuPaul is that he's been in the drag scene since the 80s and the 90s. And I think that because he's been around for so long, he should know why drag culture and queer culture is actually better off staying in its own cultural enclave, staying as a subculture so it can actually be subversive. And larger society was also better off when that was the case, when we had this culture that some things are shameful, some things belong in nightclubs where only adults are around, they have adult and sexual themes, therefore kids shouldn't be exposed to it. And when I saw this speech that he did at the Emmys, I thought it was just complete word salad. I don't know who told him that was a good idea. But it's very weird to me that he, having been in drag scenes for so long, doesn't understand why it would be good for drag culture to stay away from children.
Can you explain the awfuls? Why liberal white women? I mean, I've been long on the record that that is the most vile, vicious creature on the planet, the liberal white woman. But why would they prefer to watch a show about drag queens? It's odd.
I mean, at the time, in my own experience, I watched RuPaul's Drag Race because it was just something totally foreign to me and I didn't understand the culture, and that's why I watched it. But having met other women who watched RuPaul's Drag Race, my understanding was they watched it because they have constant indoctrination from the media and the culture that they need to fit in with this subculture, and I've met them, and most of them have laptop jobs. Most of them are neoliberals. Most of them are cosmopolitans. They live in the cities. They're urbanites. And in case you didn't know, or some of your viewers didn't know, the awful class is the affluent white liberal female. That's what the acronym stands for. And it definitely applies to this audience.
There's an article out in the New York Post about Gen Z women being terrified to turn 30 because they think they turn ugly. Now, obviously, I consider that to be insane. I prefer a woman with some character and some lines on her face. But how is this social media? What is this telling women that they turn ugly when they turn 30? 30-year-old women are dimes.
Well, I covered this the other day, and it was kind of confusing because they cited a TikTok that was made by a woman who is 29 years old. She is not Gen Z, she's a millennial. And what she voiced is an anxiety about not reaching certain basic milestones in life, because really the number 30, it's arbitrary. She said that she has no kids, like she hasn't gotten a real start in life, like she doesn't have meaning in life and something is missing. And she's right. And I really do feel for people who are in that situation, because there's nothing wrong with being a certain age and being single. What's wrong with it is that they're being told that this is something to celebrate. Needs to be acknowledged and validated that, yeah, you are missing something that is meaningful, that lasts longer than your life. And I feel really bad for young women today who are being told that their only value is in selling their sexuality, in, you know, looking like Instagram models, and all of this artificial, superficial stuff. And look at who they're being compared to. They're in this pornographic culture, and they're being compared to literal robots. I mean, I've seen the rise of robot influencers who are completely generated by AI, and they're making thousands, tens of thousands of dollars off of lonely men on the internet. And, you know, these young women look around at who they're being compared to and what is being celebrated and affirmed by this culture. And your choice is either to emulate that, which is horrific, it's nightmarish, or your option is to opt out. And that's what it seems like they want to do. They're saying they express feelings of wanting to unalive themselves before they turn 30 or before they turn 40. It's horrifying that they're thinking that way, but I completely understand. And that's just another brand of nihilism and vanity that plagues this generation. I think I saw this other trend on TikTok that was called the shifting trend. And there are members of Gen Z who are falling victim to a form of mass psychosis where they want to opt out of real life so that they can shift themselves into other dimensions of reality because this one is not habitable for them.
Not habitable for them. Is this a parent problem? Is it a social media problem? How in the world do we have, and I'm not gonna act like it's all the next generation, I hate that, all the next generation sucks, but how do we have so many people in this upcoming generation that are so lost? It doesn't even make me mad, it saddens me.
The parent problem and the social media problem are intertwined, though, because why are all of these minors using TikTok unsupervised? Why are they being given unlimited, unsupervised internet access that is turning them into perfect victims for social contagions and actual mass hysteria? I mean, I wish that we lived in a society where women could still be diagnosed with hysteria. Because if you looked at all of these kids on TikTok or some of these diehard Swifties, I guarantee you that they would be institutionalized. They are not in their right mind. And another part of it is just that they're so inundated with pop culture references that they wish they could live in one of these fantasy worlds. The main one that is talked about among these shifters on TikTok is Hogwarts. Like, they want to shift themselves into a different dimension that they believe is real, by the way. They believe that Hogwarts is real, and that they can shift themselves into Hogwarts so that they can date Draco Malfoy. I'm serious. It's a lot to take in. I understand your reaction.
We are in some friggin' trouble. Mary, thank you for updating us on some insanity out there. That was awesome. Come back soon. Jeez. All right. How do you deal with commie scum in the media? GOP doesn't know. Apparently, UFC fighters do. We'll show you that for Enlighten the Mood next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. Now, this put a smile on my face. I hope it puts a smile on your face, but I need to clarify something before I go to this clip. This is MMA fighter Sean Strickland scolding some commie apparatchik reporter. I need to clarify. This is how GOP elected officials should treat the media. Here's how the GOP normally treats the media. When the media is pouring out some commie gobbledygook and trying to make them look terrible, they try to issue qualifiers. Hey, so tell me, Mr. Congressman, you're not a white supremacist anymore, are you? Do you denounce white supremacy? And immediately, no matter who they are, from the top, bottom, Republicans, no, of course I denounce white supremacy. Racism's very, very bad. I have many, many black friends. And then immediately with the qualifiers. And that's not how you deal with communists. Communists have to be dealt with harshly. The communist must feel fear and pain, or he will never stop. He doesn't care about your qualifiers. He doesn't care about anything. He is there to attack you. He is there to destroy you. So you attack him back or you will lose. And I have watched the GOP do this my entire life. Well, I mean, okay. I mean, I am vaccinated. You want to know how to treat these people? Sean Strickland, show them how to treat these people.
Things you said about the trans community. You said this past October when they announced the Bud Light sponsorship that you'd go so hard on Bud Light in your next fight, they'll have to accept me or denounce me when they know what, and will know what they stand for.
Here's the thing about Bud Light. 10 years ago, to be trans was a mental f***ing illness. And now all of a sudden, people like you have f***ing weaseled your way into the world. You are an infection. You are the definition of weakness. Everything that is wrong with the world is because of f***ing you. And the best thing is the world's not buying it. Well, I don't want my kids being taught about, you know, their sexual preference. Like, dude, this guy is the f***ing enemy. You want to look at the f***ing enemy to our world? It's that motherfucker right there asking these stupid f***ing questions.
You can dislike the language. We obviously beeped it out because it's a family show. You can dislike the method. That's how it's done. Stop treating the media as if they're journalists or the media, and start treating the vile commie scum like exactly what they are. Vile commie scum. These people want to destroy everything you care about. Treat them as such. That lightened my mood. All right, I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.